Your website is the front door of your business, but the way teams build and optimize is broken. Stuck between inflexible templates and cumbersome codependent solutions, there's a better, faster way. Enter Webflow, a visual-first platform that empowers you to create freely. Now you can ship web pages in weeks instead of months and save millions in development costs. These are the real results for companies like Orange Theory, Dropbox, and IDEO. Get started today at webflow.com. Webflow, more than a website builder.
Hi there. My name is Jenny Rooney, Chief Experience Officer and host of Adweek's newest podcast, Marketing Vanguard. We're so excited to bring you the next evolution of CMO Moves by bringing you insightful content from our marketing community. Together, we'll dive into discussions with CMOs and other C-suite executives who are tasked daily with making decisions that in incremental or monumental ways move the needle for their brands, their companies, and the customers they serve. In each episode, we'll focus on one key idea or decision, why they made it, what it caused, whether it worked, the ripples it set forth, and how it has defined the person as a business leader. We also address missteps, poor choices, and gambles, as mistakes, of course, often yield the greatest knowledge. In addition, we'll ask each guest to share the names of people they rely on daily, as well as a recommendation for whom we should interview next.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Marketing Vanguard podcast. I'm Jenny Rooney, and I'm so thrilled to be here today with Tiffany Zhang-Yu Wang. Tiffany is the CMO of OpenWeb, and I'm so excited to have this conversation with her. We're going to dive in, and Tiffany, welcome.
Thank you, Jenny. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk to you. You know, I've known each other for a little while now, but I'm really excited to have this conversation with you in the context of the new Marketing Vanguard podcast, which is really where I talk to marketing decision makers and really sort of have you each identify key decisions you've made, choices you've had to make, and the things you're implementing to really drive business growth, even as you're focusing on brand and brand building and engagement with your audiences. So I'm super, super excited to get into this conversation with you. You are an incredibly smart marketer. I've been so dazzled by sort of how you think about the practice and how you think about marketing leadership. And so I'm thrilled to have you here today. So let's dive in. I mean, I think one of the first questions I want to ask you is so that our listeners can get to know you a little bit better. You know, so much today is all about optics and what we share externally and the things that, you know, might be summarized in a LinkedIn profile. Tell us something about yourself that nobody would know based on looking at your socials or your external bio or anything that you present to the world.
First of all, thank you so much, Jenny. Thank you for having me. And respect is fully shared. I love what you're doing at Adweek. So thank you, first of all. So two things I think folks cannot find on my LinkedIn profiles. One is that I'm actually a trained sommelier. So I love wines. Wow. And more importantly, I love sharing wines with my friends. So my favorite thing to do is to host a dinner party and to pair the great minds, diverse minds around the table, just like I pair wine with food. I always believe that when beautiful minds and people together, magic happens. Another thing is that I'm a competitive sailor. So,
oh my gosh.
I learned a lot about leadership, about teamwork, and about crisis management on the boat. And it's also often the moments of zen and inspiration for me.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. And I would imagine a glass of wine on a boat would be the best mashup of all. So I love that.
We do drink rum at the end of the sailing.
Even better. I love that. And a good story comes after that. A little bit of the rum drinking, I'm sure, as you continue
Absolutely.
To hang out with your friends. What would you have been if not a CMO? And we're going to get into sort of the focus on, you know, the concept of being a CMO today and sort of how CMOs need to be business growth drivers within organizations in a second. But, you know, had you not chosen that path, what would you have been?
I've always thought I would become a diplomat growing up. I grew up in China. I was fascinated by the region of sub-Saharan Africa. So I did all my education, all my trainings, you know, to be a diplomat. But I often say that life makes more choices for you than you make for life. Mm-hmm. And I ended up using the geopolitical insight and knowledge to become an investor in sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia. And today I would say a lot of skills in diplomacy come very handy to ensure my leadership style, to be empathetic, to be creative. Yes, if I'm not a CMO today, I would have become a diplomat, I would say.
That's amazing. And I love what you just said about, you know, creativity. And I think there's so much, the next generation of would-be marketing leaders need to know about this practice and about leadership in this area that might not be taught in the classroom. And it's through people like you who share, you know, your personal stories and sort of your personal strengths and how you blend them all together to do what you do so effectively. That is so incredibly valuable. So that's why I love that we're having this conversation.
Yeah, you're right. I think the versatile backgrounds are really important to shape how a CMO can be and how creative the CMO can be. And I always believe that different paths can lead to this position. And the key is to know the strength you have and then tie your strengths to the company goals in your role. But to your point, I don't think it has to be necessarily taught in school. But as long as someone has the passion for this role and growing to role, I think there's so many paths that can lead to this role.
Yeah, I love that. And I've in previous work I've done, it has been exploring the diverse educational and experience backgrounds that when you look at sort of look across the line of CMOs who are highly innovative and influential positions, you know, that taking a step back and looking back at sort of their previous experience or their educational backgrounds, it's fascinating to see so much diversity in that. And I think
totally.
I would hope to only see more diversity in backgrounds as we move forward, you know, to drive effectiveness and success in the role. So super exciting.
Absolutely.
Anything else, you know, other things you learned earlier in your life that that inform now what you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yes. So I grew up in China. There is a Chinese proverb I always say to my team, especially in today's bear market. I can, you know, repeat to my team every single day, a crisis is always an opportunity in the disguise of danger. So literally the word crisis in Chinese is composed of two separate characters. One is danger, the other is opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I think that is really imprinted in me. I think every time when we see something goes wrong, and if you leverage that opportunity to discover where you can fix the operations, what data you can get to actually optimize operations to come out even stronger, and then find the right talents to actually fix the problems, you actually can create the operational longevity. So I think that principle really goes a long way in my everyday work. And another thing that my dad told me when I was very little, that he said that, you know, we only live 30,000 days. That's about 90 years old, right? So if you think about that, 30,000 days are not a very, very long period of time. So I think it's okay to fail, but it's not okay for not trying. So I think that also helps me every day to make decisions, you know, how you balance risks and rewards, and then make sure that you surround your decisions with the right people, right resources, with the calculated risks, but make the best bet you can.
Oh my gosh. Well, I feel very inspired and I'm sure everybody listening does, because I mean, we're living in very challenging times. I mean, there's so much uncertainty, so much uncertainty. And sometimes the challenge can be overwhelming, right? And sort of mm-hmm. figuring out the path forward. But I love what you said about like get a hold of the data or get a hold of the information that you need, at least something to guide you. And I love that, you know, if you failure is not trying, period. So I love that. And I think we're going to see, you know, people have to continue to try and we have to continue to find new ways of breaking through and garnering success. And I think marketers obviously are dealing with a swirl of that right now and always have been, you know, I mean, I think mm-hmm. this narrative that marketers are, you know, CMOs are struggling or it's challenging to be a CMO or the role itself continues to transform. Listen, that's been happening for decades, you know, so I think it's just the forces might be different and yes. Things that are happening in our world might be different or things that are happening among consumers or obviously technology might be different, but there's always been forces, right? So it's
absolutely.
So yeah, it's exciting. And I think that that's why I'm inspired by your point of view, but I think it's that kind of point of view that's so necessary, especially to be in a marketing leadership role these days. So the next question is around, you know, I personally played soccer my whole life growing up and it's just a sport that
I love.
And it informed, being on a soccer field to me is like a metaphor for life. You know what I mean? You're with a team, mm-hmm. you're moving in one direction, you have an end goal. That you're working together towards. So my question to you is, you know, you're on a soccer field in your current role as CMO. Are you the striker? So are you up at the front trying to score those goals? You know, do you play at midfield, sort of kind of, you know, holding the base? Or are you back at defense, you know, defending the goal so that the other team doesn't score? And are you on one side of the field or the other? So I'll let you answer that as you wish.
Yes. When I was younger, I always thought I would be a striker. And it's often the first impression people got from me too. But in reality, if you work with me closely, most people would think of me as a fixer. So in other words, they actually can put me in any position on the field. And I think we just talk about the versatility. Maybe it was because my background as investor or as a diplomat, I truly appreciate that the value as a CMO to be versatile because at the end of the day, we're a business leader. We really have to spot the trends of the external forces, but also internal forces to understand where are the gaps we can best fit in. And I think that contributes to the longevity of the CMO role as well as the business leader. So I would say today I've become more versatile to play on different fields. Today I can actually focus on CMO role and tomorrow I can help sales more to drive the revenue side. You know, another day I actually can look into the engineering, the tech and product to help them, you know, to reshape the organizations based on the inputs I have from the market, right? But I think there's no way to look at your question. I want to say that if I have to choose a role, I want to be a franchise owner of the soccer team.
Interesting. Oh, very interesting. I love that.
So, yeah. So the reason being that, you know, I play in the space of digital trust and safety and the new wave and new the model of advertising. So a lot of what I do and how I think about it is how we actually reshape the blueprint of advertising, where we actually can put digital trust and safety at a core of strategic growth rather than an afterthought. And it isn't easy because digital trust and safety was an afterthought. It was a cost center and it was worse than insurance policy. And in the last decade or so, it was never a priority on top of advertisers' mind. So how we flip the script, how we elevate the conversation, how we define what good looks like so that CMOs and CROs, those budget owners who actually spend money in advertising can truly put digital trust and safety in their OKR on their top priority list. And that is reshaped the game in a way. So if I could choose, I want to be a franchise owner for a soccer team.
I love that. I love that answer. I want to ask you real quick, a follow on to what you were saying. OpenWeb is a B2B marketer. You're marketing to other businesses. Talk a little bit about your perspective on, you know, we've always talked long about, you know, B2C and B2B are merging in practice, and, you know, one's borrowing from the other in terms of strategy and go to market. You know, there are other camps that say that they're vastly different. You know what I mean? And there's a real art to B2B that's vastly different than B2C. I personally am seeing a lot of incredible innovation, creative innovation coming from B2Bs. And I feel like there is, you know, we're kind of entering a new era of that kind of creative innovation and even creative advertising coming from the B2B set. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I tell you an anecdote. November last year, I was at a CMO event and with many CMOs, but majority of the group were B2C CMOs. And then I was kind of the minority in the room. And then the most talked topic was how to prove ROI as a B2C marketer, because a big portion of spend goes into brand, the brand marketing, right? And I think it was the biggest struggle for most of the B2C CMOs. And related to that is how to work with CFOs. And I was sitting in the room and I was discussing with folks on the panel. It was shocking to me, this takeaway from the majority of the group of CMOs. But I think when I think about it afterwards, it makes completely sense. For B2B CMOs, it is a given that you have to prove ROI every single step forward. The alliance with CFO is a given. You can't simply get your budget without proving the ROI, which is actually a tricky part. How would you be able to prove ROI before you even have a budget? It's a chicken and egg, right? So we are trained to speak and talk in data. We're trained to speak in funnel analytics, in channel analytics. So, but the flip side is a lot of the B2B companies, you've never heard about them until they IPO'd. You might even not hear about them after they get IPO'd, they're big enough, because historically B2B businesses, enterprise, especially enterprise softwares, we didn't invest enough in brand marketing. Right. So after that kind of gathering, I spent a lot of time with B2C CMOs, learning from them about the brand marketing practices, and vice versa, share with them how I convince CFO to give me even double the budget in this bear market, right? And how I actually approve ROI. So I think the takeaway from that is, I think people usually divide the demand gen from brand. But I think at the end of the day, you have to unify them. And they are together. When you enhance the brand, you open top of the funnel. And when you actually drive the funnel, you actually can leverage the bottom of the funnel, such as the referenceability, to further the brand. And it's a circle. It's not two separate areas. And it's very important to realize that when you talk about convergence of the B2C marketers, what they struggle, and what B2B marketers, what we struggle. But I think if we collaborate more and understand our strengths more from each side, and we can present a better practice for this discipline overall, that brand and demand should go hand in hand. Last thing I will say is that at the end of the day, whatever CMOs do, just like any other business leader, we have to hold ourselves accountable for the enterprise value. So every single board meeting, I start with one single slide. And it's the same slide every single board meeting. I want to imprint that view in my board members, my investors' mind, that I care about their investment, I care about enterprise value, and those are the four levers that I focus on. So I can share a little bit with you. So on the left side of the equal signs, enterprise value. On the right side, which is a function of four factors. The first factor is the base, you know, as a CMO, I want to know how I can expand and land my ideal customer profile. And that is actually supported by product marketing, which is the, one of the discipline, you know, in my org. The second is, as sales and the product are focused on product market fit, it's my job to focus on channel product market fit. So that is how I identify the most effective channels to drive the products to the hands of the customers. So that's everything about demand and account-based marketing. And the third is the velocity, the sales velocity. So how fast I can go through the channels and get to the customers. Then that's the, all the lifecycle marketing. And the fourth factor is how repeatable this can be and how scalable that can be if you talk about if you can have the longevity of the business. And all of those factors need to be measured, and those operations need to be run with data to really drive the statistic significance that when a company grows, you can say everything you say was true, right? So I always start that single slide with investors to make them understand whatever marketing operations I run, it contributes to one of the factors that drive enterprise value. And of course, all of those can be effective if you have a single media narrative and single brand identity. So that governs every single thing, which under product marketing, ABM, and lifecycle marketing. So that was a little bit, you know, tip I share with a lot of CMOs is start your board meeting telling them that you care about ROI and that's how it is reflected in your operations.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great advice for anybody listening too. That's amazing. And it leads into my next question, which is around, I'm obsessed with the concept of collaboration. Like nothing in this industry works in a silo. You know, there has to be connectivity and collaboration across the board, whether it's internal or external, to be a successful marketer. How do you think about that? And specifically looking internally, you know, who are your best collaborators? I mean, who inside your company do you reach out to? Do you feel like you need to be in lockstep with?
Yeah, I would say all the C-suites in the executive team and my direct reports, of course. But in this bear market, my most frequent collaborator is the CFO. Because being in lockstep with him allows me to not ensure that I have the budget to do the right thing, but also force myself to be accountable of the decisions I'm making. And then that cascade to my working relationships with product, technology, sales. But starting with that conversation with CFOs in this bear market is critical. Yes, and the good outcome of it is, you know, we were able to almost double the marketing budget for this year, right? And because of collaboration with him, that he understands the ROI that we have already proven and the new budget we need to double down what worked. Mm-hmm. Because I do believe in bear market, it's actually an absolute opportunity for brand to shine.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. You don't seem like somebody who scares easily. So I'll preface this by saying that. But what does scare you as a business leader? I mean, what do you do to overcome those fears? Because everybody fears something.
Yeah. Gosh. My husband says I don't deal very well with boredom. Seriously, like, you know, I really just don't deal very well with boredom. So the thing I'm the most scared of is being out of touch with emerging technologies.
Interesting.
Because I think we are the ears and eyes on the ground for the company to avoid being disrupted. So it's very important to be aware of what the new technologies out there, but also spot the opportunities to collaborate and partner with new technologies to fast track our growth. So I think as a CMO, you know, I strive to be as well versed as CTO in the emerging technologies, even though I don't need to code everything, but I need to share my insights with him. What I see, and I think that's very important to me. And another thing is related to the specific industry I'm in. As a CMO, I think we take the responsibility to drive ethical practice. Mm-hmm. So I think today we talk more and more about ethical by design for sustainable business. And I think a CMO is responsible for a lot of decisions to shape that. So I think another thing I'm scared of is not talking enough about it in my company or in the industry, because we are the best communicator, supposed to be the best communicator, in the boardroom and in the C-suite. So if we don't repeat how important it is, ESG would just be a nice talk, but never become a real thing. Yeah. Mm.
Your website is the front door of your business, but the way teams build and optimize is broken. Stuck between inflexible templates and cumbersome code-dependent solutions, there's a better, faster way. Enter Webflow, a visual-first platform that empowers you to create freely. Experience a CMS where you can build dynamic content without code. Native localization that lets you translate your site in one click to reach global audiences. And third-party apps and integrations so you can build faster. Now, you can ship web pages in weeks instead of months and save millions in development costs. These are the real results for companies like Orange Theory, Dropbox, and IDEO. Get started today at webflow.com. Webflow, more than a website builder.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of the responsibility that you have on you to make sure the company stays on track and having that sort of North Star in everything you do is so key. And so strong. And so, I mean, that is a huge responsibility as CMO. Obviously, you know, creativity is so core to the people who lead marketing in organizations. I mean, having a creative mind, and I don't mean there's many ways to define creativity, right? Obviously, there's problem-solving creativity. There's communication creativity, right? I mean, there's a million ways to define that. Certainly in marketing, I think people default to advertising creativity, right? And thinking about the external manifestation of brand. But where do you find inspiration for your creativity and for your ideas? Because, I mean, there's so much in life and just the exposure that we have as people, you know, to other sorts of creative thinkers and sort of manifestations of creativity that can inform and inspire. So where do you find that inspiration?
Yes, for me, it is related to the path I took to get to where I am. Just as we discussed, I think there's so many paths to land on this row. And for me, I spent many years in Paris. So it became a habit to visit museums because there are just too many museums and too many galleries. So it became part of the habit. And I find it's a very therapeutic way to introspect on what I'm doing and get exposed to the new ways of thinking of the world. So I go to museums or galleries at least 4 times a month, like a very minimum. Yeah, and I feel that when you see how artists shape the world and then how they describe the problems you also experience from different ways and mediums, and I think it's often will spark an idea for me to say, hey, you know, why don't I do certain things differently in a new way? And I think another source of inspiration is simply people. I always feel that it's never my intentional decisions in my life which contribute the most to who I am today, but the people I met along the way. Somehow they said something on the way and opened my eyes, say, oh, why I didn't think about it. And so I really value the source of inspiration from different people, really different backgrounds. So I intentionally spend a lot of time with diverse backgrounds. So that includes AI researchers, founders, because I'm a geek at heart, but I also spend a lot of time with artists and creative directors and to see how they think about the same problem in a different way, usually around a you know, dinner table, as I mentioned, I love hosting the dinners.
With good wine.
With good wines. So I find they're a good source of inspiration for me. And I will end this answer on one thing that one statistician told me. So I had my statistics degree, and I find it's mathematics is usually a very good way to think about a problem overall. He said in the machine learning, there's a difference between local maximum and the global maximum. So the local maximum is you use all the information you already know and you can get a hold of to optimize the operation. And the global maximum is you threw a random dart somewhere, mm-hmm. and to actually optimize the whole operations and ideally have a global maximum. And I think it's very revealing to me. Think about everyday work. What we do is we optimize what we know with what we know. You can't get global maximum by doing that. So you have to throw a random dart somewhere. And I think, you know, borrowing the inspirations from very diverse backgrounds is a good way to do that.
I love that. It ensures that you're going to have success in some regard you take that course. Every day as a CMO, you're making decisions, right? I mean, there's forks in the road every single day that you show up for work. Making decisions is obviously core to any business leader. And it's just foundational. And they're decisions that just change the trajectory of a business. As a CMO, you know, what is one decision? Share with me, because there are a million, but what's one decision you've made that has had the most significant ripple effects for your business?
Yes. Across all the companies I work with, I find the one single most important thing that has the most ripple effect is hiring. Mm-hmm. Hiring the right people and train them, grow them, evangelize for them is almost a solution to everything. Mm. You know, there are many other practices I can mention who can have ripple effect, but I think it always comes down to hiring the right people to solve the problem you identify.
Yep. The name of this podcast is Marketing Vanguard, and it's intentionally, that word was chosen intentionally because the literal definition of vanguard is a group of people leading the way in new developments or ideas. What's an example of a development or an idea that you've had that has led the way for your company or for your industry?
Yes. So I joined Open Web in August last year. So Open Web is a community engagement platform that helps over 1,000 publishers and brands to build their own communities. So we do that by safeguarding the subscribers and users of the communities, doing content moderation, as well as building the first-party data to shape the social and the intent graph so that the publishers and brands do not need to rely on what governs and then start to do the monetization in a more sustainable way. So if you think about that, the business has three components. You have safety, you have first-party data, you have monetization. And it's very, very hard to explain to people that's all things we do. So one thing I have already done before Open Web and continue doing at Open Web is to really shape the societal awareness of how we actually can drive advertising and engagement in a more ethical and people-first way. So in September last year, so I launched and coined the concept of community economy with the World Economic Forum. Mm-hmm. Because what I believe is we talk a lot about Web3 and a creator economy, but we should ask, how do business innovate given that environment? Because creator economy is talking about creators, but what business can do with that?
Yes, I think 1,000%. Could not agree more.
Yeah. So I think it really ends on the flip side of the coin of the creator economy, the community economy. So I think I launched that concept and really evangelize that concept and flip that script in the market about for any business to sustain the growth, you need to think about a Maslow pyramid, just like for human beings. You need to cover the safety, you need to build actually your own first party data. And then only after covering the bases like this, you actually can diversify your engagement. So I think this this narrative and the path that we offer under that concept allow our customers and allow the industry to think more about what actually business can do, you know, in the so-called creator economy.
I love, love, love that. Tiffany, I have one more question for you. Yes. What we like to do with this podcast is play it forward, pay it forward, or kind of pass the baton, if you will. And so I'd love to use this as a chance to ask you, who's next? You know, who should be the next CMO or industry leader that you recommend we interview for Marketing Vanguard?
Yes, I have two names on top of my mind. Mm-hmm. So they're not CMOs, but I think those are the two people that CMOs should, the roles that they represent are what CMOs need to collaborate with more often. One is Barry Markowitz, Barry Markowitz, who is the EVP of Marketing Excellence Center for one of our investors' insights. Cool. Yeah, so I find often the leaders like Barry, who really hold ourselves accountable in terms of the marketing operations, and we can always seek their help to really benchmark our metrics. So when you have that straight line and when you have that alignment with key stakeholders within investors, and you are able to actually have the board support, and you are able to run the operations, you know, with the support from both investors and your C-suite peers. Another person is Lisa Charlotte. So she is the co-founder of Extraordinary Woman on Board. Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot about board matters and how we make sure that women are on the boards. But I think the sharing with her allows me to take a board member view when I look at my role. It's almost like if I sit at the other side of the table, what would I expect from the CMO? And only by doing that, I'm able to actually deliver what actually the board wants. So I think I really encourage all the CMOs in the market to really build that allyship and a relationship with the key marketing operating partners in the investors groups, as well as, you know, stay in touch with the industry organizations like Lisa's about a woman on board or any board associations, so that CMOs can take the board member view when they look at their own operations.
I love that. Tiffany, thank you. Thank you so much for being here with me. It's been wonderful talking with you as always. And thanks for being part of Marketing Vanguard.
Thank you so much, Jenny. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Vanguard, part of the Adweek Podcast Network and Acast Creator Network. This podcast was produced by Jordan Pratano, executive produced by Al Manarino and John Heil, and edited by Lane McGibney at Boutwell Studios. You can listen and subscribe to all of Adweek's podcasts by visiting adweek.com/podcasts. Stay updated on all things Adweek Podcast Network by following us on Twitter at Adweek Podcast. And if you have a question or suggestion for the show, send us an email at podcast@adweek.com. Thanks for listening.